Hi, everybody. So I just want to say first, welcome, and thank you so much for coming out at 11 a.m. on today for this panel discussion, Critical Refractions Through Storytelling about Land of Mirrors. So, but before we get started, I just want to say a few thank yous. I'm Mary McDonald. I'm the curator of this show. And I wanted to thank the artists for embracing this open-ended platform of an exhibition and to create some of these new works for us. And I also wanted to thank Penny and Chloe, who have helped me so much this week install the exhibition. I've been a bit of a ghost curator myself this week, so in a way it's kind of been a bit appropriate maybe, considering some of the work's themes and that sort of thing. But thank you so much for all of your assistance. And also I want to thank Broken Books for lending some of the titles in the future or Further Fictions Library. Some of those authors have already begun to create new universes for us to kind of explore, and I thought it was Penny and I discussed this as an idea to have it as an extra exhibition aid with the rest of the show. So thank you so much to Broken Books and to the various authors for creating those universes. And to last night, to Aaron Turk, who served wine for us, and to all the volunteers who made the exhibition opening extra special, and Jumping Bean for the coffee today. So thank you to all those people.
I'm going to jump in with some bios to get an introduction to the artists, if you don't know them already, curator. Michael Flaherty was born in St. John's, Newfoundland, and subsequently spent most of his childhood getting lost in the woods. He turned this urge to explore into a career as an artist. He has crossed North America by bicycle, lived alone for 3 months on a deserted island, and resided in 6 of Canada's 10 provinces. Flaherty currently resides in Catalina, Newfoundland, where he maintains a busy and varied studio practice. Will Gill earned a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from Mount Allison University in 1991 with a focus on sculpture. Gill maintained a studio practice since graduation, evolving from sculptural exploration to a practice that encompasses painting, sculpture, photography, and video work. He lives and works in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. Philippa Jones has been a St. John's-based artist since 2009. Prior to moving to Canada, Jones completed a BA in Fine Art and an MA in Interactive Art and Design at the University College Falmouth. Jones' diverse art practice has included and sometimes combines printmaking, painting, pen and ink, animation, art games, and interactive installations. Central to Jones' work is the exploration of constructed realities, active myth-making, and a celebration of wonder and a wonder of the inquisitive mind. Jerry Robson started out from Collards Point, a small community in rural Newfoundland. Jerry received his BFA from Memorial University in Newfoundland, Grenfell campus, and earned an MFA in Studio Arts Fibers from Concordia University some years later. He has a focused practice around material-based installation and performative storytelling. Primarily uses drawing and narrative to construct and document his unyielding attachment to all things commonplace. Robson currently resides in Sackville, New Brunswick, where he teaches in the Fine Arts Department at Mount Allison University. Jason Wells. Wells has been performing as drag queen Irma Gerd. Am I saying her right?
Yeah.
Irma Gerd. Since 2013, bringing new ideas to the character with every transformation. Irma was born in Toronto's underground drag scene and has been a study in glamour and lives ever since. Jason received a Bachelor of Fine Arts in 2011 from Grenfell campus of Memorial University of Newfoundland in his hometown of Corner Brook, NL. He currently lives in St. John's. About the curator. Mary McDonald is an artist, critic, and informant curator currently residing in St. John's, Newfoundland. Mary graduated from Mount Allison University with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in 2006 and continued her practical education through Zwicker's Gallery in Halifax and the Owens Art Gallery in Sackville. In 2012, she completed an MFA in Criticism and Curatorial Practice at OPED University and an internship at C Magazine in Toronto. Oh,
it's a kettlebell.
Mary specializes in temporary and ephemeral exhibition structures and collaboration. Her research interests include artists working with rural communities and contexts, interdisciplinary approaches to curating, and alternative locations in contemporary art. So that's everyone on the panel today. My name is Penelope Smart. I'm the director of Eastern Edge Gallery. Thank you very much for coming. I'll turn it over to the artists and the curators.
Thank you, Penny. So I have kind of a little intro, but this is going to be a sort of open-ended panel and discussion, so I encourage all of the artists to, if they have questions, to ask each other, they should do so. But I'll start with a little overview. Okay, so for generations, Newfoundland has ignited a rich imaginary for its residents, visitors, and those who pore over maps. Many are swept away by its stories or enchanted by its geographies. About a year ago, the board of Eastern Edge and myself were discussing a new feeling we were experiencing in our community. We nicknamed it the New Newfoundland, and we were seeing so many creative projects popping up across the province, from new residencies, Fogo Island is an example, to restaurants and the work that they've been doing, and also the work that visual artists, musicians, and writers were also making seemed to reflect this feeling as well. It was both local and global at once, here and there, real and imagined. And this creative energy still had a strong link to Newfoundland's geography, its histories, and its cultures, but it was also deeply personal, and it was new. It was as if these artists were translating and transforming their physical or social experiences into new imaginary worlds. They were personal symbologies and parallel universes to be explored. And yet at times these images seem to overlap or share a distinct tone, which I encourage us, I think, to consider a little bit more deeply today. So questions like, what are we haunted by? Where are we going? So that's where Land of Mirrors emerged, a group exhibition of five contemporary Newfoundland artists, where we could see this feeling refracted through the work. And so the show before you was playful and open-ended, more multiple answer rather than a single response to the question, what is this new Newfoundland? And in this way, I'd like, this discussion to be also open-ended. And the artists will tell some stories about the work that they've created through discussion. And we'll take turns asking each other some questions and passing the metaphorical mirror. So I guess my first question, and I have a few, but we'll start with this, is how would you describe your work's relationship to this place we call Newfoundland? Whether it be a physical experience or a social one, maybe, or maybe a conceptual one. That's my first question. It's a big one.
Well, I guess maybe I can start then.
And you can also, like, when maybe we do start, just tell us a little bit about the work that you created.
Okay, well, it's all kind of overlapped anyway,
yeah.
So this, I guess, when Mary suggested this show, the first thing that came to mind, she talked about Newfoundland and our social worlds and how, you know, the first thing that came to mind for me was inclusion. That was one of the things that has always been really interesting to me, living here on an island, coming from away and trying to figure out where's that point when you can be included, or the difference between belonging and not belonging, or that sort of thing. And one of the things that occurred, from my past is my grandfather was in the Navy, and a striking image I have from when I was a kid was seeing these battleships that were covered in this incredible sign work, and upon further research, the design work was called Dazzle Camouflage, which is really interesting because it's like an oxymoron. It's like camouflage is trying to conceal something, but dazzle is sticking out incredibly. So I thought that was a really quite beautiful metaphor for existing here in a way, because there's always a struggle for people that aren't from here. And I'm not complaining really about it so much as I am pointing out that it's kind of like, it is obvious for people that aren't from here, that you get reminded all the time. People say, well, oh, no, it's only a joke when we say come from away, you're come from away. But really, you know, it is a joke and humorous, but at the same time, it's also a little bit about pointing out the difference between being from a place or, belonging in a place and not. So I find that really interesting, and I've been here long enough to know that that's kind of just the way it is when you live in a distinct culture like Newfoundland or Quebec or any other little pocket across the country. So that's really cool for me. So this Dazzle Camouflage that, sorry, am I talking to, I'll try to keep it short. I just wanted to explain the background behind the design work on this suit. So this is what Dazzle Camouflage looks like on battleships. And so here's this thing that was really interesting that was covering ships in the First World War. And the thing that's, to me, is interesting about it and creates such a beautiful metaphor is it wasn't employed to camouflage the boats per se, but to confuse the opposition. And so they were trying to confuse the Germans as to the direction, their intentions, so that they couldn't get torpedoed. It's hard to tell the design of the boat. It's hard to tell if it's a battleship or a merchant ship. And so when I started thinking about, well, this striking imagery, and I've always been wanting to include it in my work, and I had this suit that I used up in the Arctic for a residency last year, and it was still around, so it's kind of spun off into a different direction and exploration. So I put some design work onto the suit that somehow integrates within the landscape. For example, the figure with the spots on it, the kind of lichen marks or the boulder marks, the suit up at Cape Spear with this kind of warning symbol, striking, you know, like a road sign kind of thing. And the other one, I guess, it's more architectural lines. So it's about sticking out in an environment and at the same time trying to blend in. So that's a little bit about where my work came from. So it talks a little bit about social circles and, you know, that was my take on it. Anyway.
Jerry, what would you describe your experience? Because you've left Newfoundland and is now living in Sackville, and are you constantly reminded that you're a Newfoundlander in that way in relation to your work? Or,
well, I don't know. It's been this funny thing where I've talked about it to you and to other people before, but I was based in Montreal for a long time, and when I was in Montreal, I felt, I don't know, maybe it was like I put it upon myself, but I felt like I couldn't or didn't make work about Newfoundland. I always made work that, for me, I feel like my connection to place and the way I think about place and material, like I can't separate where I'm from with the making, but at the same time, I felt like it was really distant and kind of on the periphery of what I made. But then since I moved to the East Coast, it was like suddenly, even though I'm still away, but suddenly I felt like I had permission to make work a little bit more about Newfoundland. And in Sackville, in the Maritimes, I felt like I can finally say, like, I can make work about Newfoundland because of proximity or something, but I feel like I constantly need to qualify. I even feel like that when I come home sometimes. I'm like, even being called a Newfoundland artist, which I always said when I was a kid, all I ever wanted to be was a Newfoundland artist. But then I went off and I became a Canadian artist. And then to come home, I'm always like, I have to always qualify, to, like, even here in town. And last night I'll say to people, like, oh, yeah, no, I come home every year. I'm just on the West Coast. Just because you don't see me in St. John's don't mean I'm not home all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's suddenly I feel like I need to, again, like, qualify or somehow this permission that I've invented in my head probably of who is allowed to make work about the place and mm-hmm. who isn't, and kind of things that Will's mm-hmm. talking about as well. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about the work?
Oh, sure. So the work that I've made here, it's called Rituals of Preservation, Part 3. there's lots of little parts and pieces. It's the work on the plinth, the work on the walls, and the text. Again, it was built on-site in the space. For me, it's objects and metaphors, objects and images that stand in for, like, metaphors of a connection to a place. I was talking earlier with Will, just the idea of, like, taking something that might be rather, like, meaningless or everyday or commonplace is the word I think Penny used in my bio, and then through some sort of ritualistic interaction or embellishment, it's imbued with meaning given greater weight than it might normally have. And I think that your starting question about sort of how it's connected to place for me, like I said, even when I'm making work, I feel like all my approach to work is rooted in where I'm from. I can't think about interactions with material without thinking about where I'm from. There's something about, I always say in rural Newfoundland, there was like this connection with like your immediate surroundings and like a material and a acknowledgement or like such an immediate connection with resource. Mm-hmm. And since I said I'd tell a little story, the metaphor, the little story, the little narrative that I build or I tell people often before most artist talks, I have this little story that I tell about being a little kid and my father took me into the woods. And he was a logger, not a fisherman. And he said, pick a tree, Jerry. And I picked a birch tree. And he sawed it down, and we put it on the back of the slide. And we pulled it out of the woods with the screw. And we had a small family sawmill, and he turned it into some lumber. And he brought the lumber to the house. And we, in the garage, with the table saw and what have you, he built me my first drawing desk. And he built me a little wooden desk, and he put it in my room. And he said, now that's where you can do your drawings. Because I was always drawn at the kitchen table. And somewhere in that connection with, and it's kind of sentimental, but there's something there about sort of seeing that tree turn to lumber, becoming the desk that I would sit and draw at. When I make work, whether, like I said, it's about Newfoundland or not, there's this material sensibility that I feel is like rooted in that place and in those types of narratives.
That's beautiful.
Mike, do you want to say anything next?
Sure.
I feel like when I was rereading some notes today about your ideas about like ceramics and like creating like a pot, you know, as and it's almost like a personality or a person, mm-hmm. and that seems to connect with Jerry's kind of stream of consciousness there.
Well, I think that I've in recent years. Taken up some form of distorted anthropology mm-hmm. in my works, and in this piece, these pieces over here, particularly with artifacts that I find, and I make pottery and I make ceramics, and those are photographs of pottery shards on beaches, mm-hmm. In abandoned communities, underwater. And I also do astronomy, and I learned all these photographic techniques for making astronomical photos. And as I was looking at, these are really common artifacts that you see everywhere, like on every beach in Newfoundland, right? And as I was looking at them, I was thinking that the way that they are affected by the light passing through the water is the same way that light from stars is affected by passing through the atmosphere. So I've just been taking, you know, like hundreds of photos of the same thing underwater and layering them over each other. And in this astrophotography technique, and it sort of clarifies the image, but at the same time, it makes it this sort of foggy, foggy kind of surreal feeling as well. And so what appeals to me about it is sort of this continual breaking down and rebuilding of things. Like it's a pot that was made and it gets thrown away, smashed in the ocean, and then I gather up the pieces and arrange them in some way. And they get sort of moved around by the water, and then I photograph them and rebuild. You know, it's like continual breakdown and rebuild, which to me is sort of like the story of Newfoundland and rural Newfoundland, and particularly abandoned communities. Mm-hmm. And I'm a maker of things, and so you know, there's a real constructive process to the photographs rather than sort of like a capturing of something.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you're going to do an anthropology of Newfoundland, it has to be sort of like, I think it has to be sort of kitchen based, right? Especially if you're a ceramic artist. And so that might feel a bit impersonal calling it an anthropology, but at the same time, I'm a total outsider to these types of communities. I grew up in Clarenville, and I say sometimes that I'm like, it's like a weird kind of not like a real Newfoundland community because you're not a Bayman and you're not a townie. It's like something else that we don't even have a word for. And
Clarenville.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, other places, I'm sure people feel like that too, like other, you know, Trans-Canada Highway communities, basically.
Grand Falls.
Yeah. And so it's like, you know, there's some like objectivity or like, from my personal experience, I think that comes through like, this distancing from the subject matter, I think.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we can ask Jason next. Just kind of building on that idea of different layers, kind of creating your images, Mike, but you know, you're building a character every time you perform as Irma Gerd.
Mm-hmm.
And these various masks and multiple masks that you choose to wear or not wear. Do you want to talk a little bit about your work?
Yeah, well, I started thinking about the work as just like the personalities that we put on, not just as a Newfoundlander,
mm-hmm.
but myself as like a queer person or this or that. And you
mm-hmm.
kind of have your identity that you you give out to certain people, and maybe there's some code switching, like today I'm going to be like artist Jason talking on a panel, and then like later today I'll be like relaxing Jason playing with dogs. And they're just like different personalities as like masks that you wear, and drag is a way to just really push that to like the limits with like huge features and big gestures and
mm-hmm.
dancing and glitter, which maybe has leaked into my like personal mask. So I guess most, I don't know if everybody here was here last night, but I was in drag and had a second face over my face, and invited the audience to come cut pieces off to take with them. Thinking about giving out a bit of magic or a folklore, like passing on a story,
mm-hmm.
And like maybe a spell that you have to teach to somebody, or a story that needs to be passed on verbally, or it'll die. Then when the face was gone, I left. That was the end of the performance. And scissors, I have a heavy pair of black scissors that are very death-like, but then it's all covered in glitter and rubber and fun things.
It was really spooky.
Yeah, and also, yeah, that aspect of inviting people to hold scissors up to your face, I was not as scared as I should have been, and I think the audience members were more scared than I was, because they're like, eyeball. And I'm like, just go and cut off of this. Take a slice, a little slice of fruit. I was also thinking, yeah, slice of fruit, like the commodification of queer culture, and or relating that to Newfoundland culture and how we kind of amp it up sometimes. You know, you put on the accent, or you like wear the yellow rain jacket and the screech hat and kiss a fish.
So, like, going back to what Will was saying, because obviously I'm not from Newfoundland, and, like, I'm very aware that I'm always going to be an outsider here. And then when it, but it does kind of give me, like, I've come in with a new perspective, and then therefore being an outsider, I can be like a witness to things rather than necessarily being in it and experiencing it. Like, I'm always just slightly set back, which I think helps when I'm doing like doing these kind of pseudo-scientific reports. I can like be tongue-in-cheek, and I mean, it's a fine line. I have to be careful because I don't want to be disrespectful either. Like, I am celebrating what it is to live here, but yeah, I am kind of walking that line. But then, like what Jason was saying about like the commodification of Newfoundland culture too, it's like there's very small elements of what it is to live here that we project out to everyone else, and that to me they're the least interesting parts of what it is to live in Newfoundland. And and like I feel like I'm trying to kind of show that in some ways, but also like build the culture. Like, that is what we're doing as artists. We're like, culture isn't this static thing where we say it's, we're just these few things. It's like, it's constantly evolving and growing. And like, yeah, I guess like when I'm creating these new myths and these new ideas, like I'm actively trying to be making that directly happen, not just like accidentally happen. Yeah.
Want to explain a little bit more about the work, or
yeah? So like,
maybe you want to let it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I should explain it. It's pretty self-explanatory. But it's an offshoot of a bigger project that I'm doing, and I do smaller projects within, and that's called Myriad, and that stands for Ministry of Intuitive Research and Imagined Natural Discoveries. And so, like, some of the initial projects were going on expeditions, and then with groups of people who would then be encouraged to create a new myth about the place, and that's kind of evolved then into like this island that we've all gone to, where like in that space and in that place, certain things can exist, and people's imaginations are legitimized, and so then with this project, I was looking at like just things that we do experience all the time, which is we do feel trapped, especially when it comes to sort of March, and you realize like you have gone from your house to like the core of downtown, maybe to Kelsey Drive or Stavanger Drive, and that's as far as you've gone in like 3 months. That's like you feel like, did I even step outside of that like 3 kilometer little circle? And then the fog comes in and you can't even see past that space either, so you do definitely start to feel like the world doesn't exist beyond. And I can only imagine how that felt when we didn't even have the internet and you didn't have that connection to the world. But for me, yeah, I definitely feel like I am in this bubble. But then like making that bubble a tangible actual thing almost makes it easier, like you're acknowledging that you're stuck, or you're acknowledging that like that's how you feel. It almost then makes it easier to leave it or to embrace it.
Okay, so my next question is, there definitely seems to be like an element of magic or ritual or the paranormal in a lot of these works. Where do you think that comes from, how can that be a productive place from which to make work or to make art, this idea of magic, ritual?
Maybe I'll go first and I'll just carry on.
Go ahead.
So like, the idea of ritual for me like comes into play when I'm drawing. Like, that's when my imagination can kind of be freed. And part of that is like getting into a rhythm of like drawing like fragments in the same way, and like building them up until something forms. But like the ritualistic like repetition of doing that enables me to kind of tap into that like flow state.
Mm-hmm.
And like another project I'm wanting to do, like this is kind of also the bubble is formed by our collective consciousnesses, like by us feeling like we're all trapped helps to form the bubble, right? And like But I feel like that idea of the collective consciousness is also what you tap into when you get into that flow state of making and of repetition, where your body is like, you can, your mind can free itself from its body.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's used in religion. It's like how all kinds of different societies get into that special state that is,
mm-hmm.
like you can't really describe it because it's so like intangible, but it's so important at the same time. And it kind of is like that space that I feel where all the magic comes from as well.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, do you have anything to say about magic and
ritual? Magic and ritual. well, for me, I think, particularly in relation to this work, it's, and building off of what Philippa
mm-hmm.
said, I feel like art allows me this place to play with and embrace. Whether it's supernatural or magic, or it's just it's a place that's, it's like a safe place to
mm-hmm.
play with those things. I'm not sure where that comes from, but for me, it's again about a daily ritual, because I like making through habit and through
mm-hmm.
Like continually having a practice.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel in some way it's also like, if I'm sort of trying to find the roots of it in culture, I think it's something to do with, for me at least, again, from my lived experience of like rural Newfoundland and how strong or how much of an influence like the church had or religion had in the daily lives of people. And as someone who doesn't really live in that world anymore, but in a more secular world or a more secular way of life for me now, it's still very... Again, more very commonplace, very easy for me to sort of embrace things that are kind of ritualistic
mm-hmm.
or fantasy driven, or and Philippa uses the term like myth making.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that, like, you know, if religion is like a collective belief, if religion is a collective belief in rituals and myths, and people get their backs up when you say myths in relation to religion, but you know, it's a community or a congregation that come together in a shared belief in rituals and myths. And for me, that's also exactly what art is. It's this new community that I've created of these people who we've been, you know, versed in this history, and whether that's a cultural history or even art history, but it's the same place to play with rituals and myths, I think.
Yeah, like, when you were saying that, I was thinking too, like, how, like, I was brought up a Catholic and totally have, like, left that all behind, but, like, still culturally very much feel that in me. But it's almost like when I'm making this work, it's like me saying, I'm taking charge of my belief system here. Like,
yes.
I'm not just going to be a passive like person who absorbs all the things that I've been told I'm supposed to believe in. Like, what do I actually believe? Or what do I want to believe? And wouldn't it be nice if we believe this instead of some of, I don't know, like.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, if to speak directly to my work, like the small ceramic sticks wrapped in twine are exactly that for me. I call this stick, twine, fathom. And I've told some of you, I just stand there with a little ceramic stick that I've made to resemble a piece of driftwood, and I stretch out some tarred twine, fishing twine that would have been used to make nets years ago, which isn't used to make nets anymore. And I measure it with my fathom, and a fathom is the distance between a person's outreached arms. So my fathom is different than Vicky's fathom, and Mary's fathom, and Philip's fathom. And suddenly I wrap a fathom around a stick, and it's a new ritual, it's a new tiny piece of magic. And what it does, I don't know, and I'm not saying what it is, but I know that I could give Jason his own fathom on a stick, and for him he can... You know, it can be magical, it can be, I don't know, magic is sometimes a strange word because people think of like magicians or, and I don't mean it that way, it's more, maybe a better word would be spiritual, a new spiritual relationship with materials and forms.
Or somebody mentioned folklore earlier,
yeah.
And now I'm thinking about, you know, Will's like cryptic figure in the landscape, and
yeah.
It's like a, I don't know, some sort of contemporary fairy, magical creature.
Yeah, I love the idea. I love the idea of someone like maybe seeing you taking those photographs, but not seeing the photographs, and just seeing you in the distance and being like, "What the hell is that?" And, like, you just created this new weird myth.
Yeah, well, it was like for this body of work, I was shooting over the course of a couple of months, and I was shooting in all these different areas, and yeah, it certainly was unusual to have people come upon you. like I was up in Labrador. Taking down a show for the rooms, and in the evening, you know, nothing to do, so I brought the suit up with me there. And can you imagine being down like a logging road? So I pulled off the main highway thinking I would have a beautiful, quiet little spot. There's a freshly plowed road, beautiful trees were covered in snow, and there I was in my suit, striped out, and I had my camera and tripod set up and my thing, and this guy, no, this woman pulls up in a pickup truck, and she slowed down. She said, "Is everything okay out there?" Yeah. She said, "Oh, I thought something was wrong." I said, no, everything's great. I'm just, this is, and it's hard to, you know, explaining things fully over about a course of 10 minutes. It's like, No, everything's great, thanks. Slowly pulls off, and you see the brake lights come on once in a while. But back to the idea of magic. I think it, for me, like, magic is something that's more fertile in a natural environment, or at least proximity to natural environment. And I'm not sure why that is exactly, except for maybe that there's more opportunity for sort of chaotic things happening, or, you know, unexplained things happening. Whereas if you're in a more man-made setting or an urban setting, I'm not saying magic can't happen there. It certainly can, but from being surrounded by artificial things. To me, it's not conducive, really, per se, to magic things happening. So a lot of my work has involved things like the idea of mystery and not knowing, and not really having a good explanation for why things happen. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting living on an island and mm-hmm. still talking to people that actually do believe in fairies. You know, there are people on the island here who think fairies do exist, like, honestly. And I think that's really, really interesting. So there's something there about, I'm not sure what. But.
And I think, like, I don't know if this is for everyone, but I think there does come a point where even if you have a belief, you have to then choose whether you're still going to carry on believing this thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's not just, it doesn't just happen to you that you believe something. I think you have to work to believe something sometimes. And I think that's interesting that, like, there's people who believe in fairies, and at some point they question that, and then they went, yeah, no, I still believe in fairies. Like, that's what's really interesting, you know?
Yeah.
But I think, too, with, like, the idea of, you were saying, too, about supernatural worlds or the parallel worlds, I think it gives us this space to examine things where we're not limited by what actually is or what is actual fact, or and so you can, like, be free to make whatever feels natural to make or to explore without any of those constraints. So I think that's part of the reason, maybe, why, like, for me at least, like, these, I kind of, yeah, put my headspace in this other world where these things are totally possible, and then they can be possible, right?
Well, sometimes magic is like, you don't choose to believe it. It's just something that happens to you and you can't explain it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, I feel that when I'm getting in drag and I'm Jason and I'm painting my face and I shave and then I paint my face, and then suddenly at some point I feel a switch, or it doesn't feel like a switch maybe, but I just blend into this different person, and I can't really explain it, and I have different mannerisms then, and different, my voice changes, I say different things, and I'm like, no inhibitions, And it's putting on a character, but there's something magical about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my experience with magic.
Is it magical because it's not like an invented character, but it's more like this, you've just created this portal to release
mm-hmm.
something in
mm-hmm.
you. You know, like rather than like this imagined character, it's like freeing
it's,
of a
yeah.
real character.
Sort of imagined, sort of found.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Spectral connection.
Okay, so looking around the room too, it seems like there are things that still haunt us as well, like maybe images or stories or certain symbols maybe from the past. And I was wondering a little bit about that and how you feel about, as contemporary, you know, Newfoundland artists, do you feel like you have to carry some of those traditions forward in the way that they were created, or can you actively remake them, remodel them for your own kind of languages, visual languages, and so on? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think so.
And maybe this is a question for somebody, maybe Mike and Jerry, because and Jason, who were born here, kind of have that very strong connection to belonging here, but elsewhere, yeah.
Well, I think my work probably has the like most direct, well, maybe Jerry's
mm-hmm.
too, the most direct link to the past.
Yeah.
And I don't know about haunting, like that's like...
That's my word,
it's,
so.
Yeah.
I'm projecting.
Okay. Well, I think we're a really old culture here,
mm-hmm.
and so it's sort of this, you know, this baggage, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that is almost inescapable in a lot of ways. I think that, you know, and I try to deal with it in a contemporary way. I have made art before that's like hypercritical of sort of real traditional
mm-hmm.
depictions of
yeah.
and mm-hmm. ways of dealing with historical subject matter, I suppose. I made a work called Iceberg Paintings, which I think was exhibited here at some point, which is like me shooting a shotgun at icebergs. but then, you know, that's just like the aesthetic history or like the, you know, the artistic history, but then there's like the social history and so, you know, like, I think that as a culture, we keep having these crises every, you know,
mm-hmm.
every generation has one, and like,
mm-hmm.
they still affect us in a lot of ways, and you know, like,
mm-hmm.
there was Confederate, well, there was like Beaumont Hamel, and then the next generation was Confederation, and the next generation was resettlement, and the next generation was the cod fishery, and now it's like, I didn't know what the next one was going to be, but obviously it's like there's no oil money anymore.
Yeah, there's definitely a series of traumatic events,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
In Newfoundland's history, to say that lightly, you know. And just looking at your work, Jerry, like even the object kind of on the table there where it's talking about, you know, this is a death culture. Like, what is that about? Like, is that, and maybe is that like, but can that be productive and not only...
I don't find it. Yeah, it's not. Yeah, it's
yeah.
not only
we're
sad and it's not morbid. It is.
No.
I was talking about this last night, and that I think because of like the starkness of my imagery or the sort of graphic nature, and that people often think it's like really heavy or it's really
mm-hmm.
dark, and I throw around words like death and blood.
Mm-hmm.
And but for me, it's also really playful. It's like kind of tongue in cheek, kind of making fun of those things in some way, but also acknowledging them in that it's like really tangible for me.
Mm-hmm.
All of this culture is death culture again, which is just thinking about a history, a cultural history,
mm-hmm.
where again, whether it was through religion or fairies, or I feel like there's always this like fear of the other or
mm-hmm.
fear of the unknown, which
mm-hmm.
just comes out in
mm-hmm.
several of the artists' works here.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's there's something there about sort of mortality, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that as like a Newfoundland artist, I've always felt that because I'm from a really small town, especially like I've had this responsibility to a tradition, like you can't, you know, I always have to give a nod to it, but in the same vein, there's been like an obligation to seek like the new. Like there was an obligation to find new experiences, an obligation. I almost felt like obligated in a, I always say this and it's kind of strange because, you know, I come home as much as I can and I still call myself a Newfoundlander. But growing up in a rural town in the time that I did, there was never a point in my childhood when I thought I would be able to stay. Being in from rural Newfoundland, you just knew, at least in my family, everyone grew up and left. And especially the males, everyone left, and whether they went to the Alberta or wherever. So I just knew eventually I would have to leave. And being that same kid who sat at his table and drew and was really interested in this place, and you know, it took me some years to figure it out, but the way I think about it now, it's like there's this obligation to tradition and a responsibility to like move forward at the same time. But I feel like I am haunted. I'm always looking back. And I'm completely nostalgic. I mean, I've been apologizing for my nostalgia all week to everyone because I come back here and it's like, you know, it's like this is also this space is like where I, you know, came at like the age of 20 and had my first art show ever. And and all the people I did my undergrad with were out and about in the last few weeks. And a lot of what happened on the wall was just built out of like conversations that I had with people.
I think that as a group of people, we're obsessed with the past in Newfoundland. And I think it's partly because we can't really imagine the future very well. Like, we have like a lack of like implementing any sort of plan for ourselves. I just moved to rural Newfoundland and last year, and I was at this like sort of economic development thing for our region, and you know, some of the questions were like, you know, what do you imagine your community being like in 10 years or 20 years or something like that, and people were saying, oh well, I think tourists could come here and we would, you know, have something down by the harbor and they could, you know, watch a gut of fish or something like that. And I was like, oh wait, can we just like, can we maybe have a restaurant in this town or a brewery or like maybe we could have a skating rink or, so I have this like whole list of things that like people in my community can't even imagine. Because like they're, you know, we all just like, we are haunted by the past and it's like, so it's like taken over from the future in our minds.
How does this is a question for Jerry? How does a seemingly Newfoundland bound symbol of a black turnip fit into your idea of a new Newfoundland? Because these symbols do seem to be so fluid in the room, and I don't know if that's because it's is it fluid because it's a Newfoundland symbol or not? But what does a black turnip mean for Newfoundland now?
Oh God, but the turnip came about this week initially because I was painting drawing these mushrooms and monk's hood on the wall. And I felt like I wanted something a little lighter, but strangely a turnip is much heavier than a monk's hood flower. I just thought of a turnip again as this strange sort of metaphor. It's anyone growing up in Newfoundland or anyone who's just living in Newfoundland. Philip and I have been talking about turnip is the one vegetable you can always get, or the rutabaga, but we call it the turnip. Best boiled with salt beef in a pot. But it's this strange sort of hearty thing. Like again, it's almost like a metaphor for place in that it's just it stays here. It's hearty, but in painting it black again, I've tried to like give it new meaning. It's like become more like a symbol in painting it black. It allows it to be a symbol. It gives it different weight. So suddenly those turnips look like they're made of stone or they're made of bronze or something. They just suddenly change their physical and emotional weight, I guess. How it fits for like a new Newfoundland, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know.
Well, I'm interested because there's a word that connects to the turnip, which is the borrowed flag of the turnip republic. And I'm just like, you know, a black turnip maybe wasn't something like artists of the previous generation ever thought about making. But I'm so curious as to why certain things that do connect to the culture here in obvious ways, like people grow turnips, and like you don't grow on a rock face and people eat them. But how is this thing that you've made, what is it for, like, how does it speak to Newfoundland at this very moment in contemporary art practice? Like, it feels like, could it have been made anywhere else? I don't know.
But for me, it was really responsive. Like, this is not a project that I made this week. The turnips came about through conversations with you and Philippa.
Yeah.
And I just decided, like, I'm going to make turnips, and I'm going to make a turnip flag. And and why and how, I'm not sure, but I feel like that's it for me. It's that immediacy. It's like the story of just, like, responding with immediate materials. And I just wanted something that could, like, stand in as, like, a new symbol. But a symbol of what? I'm not sure. It might not even be about... It's not haunting. It is about a new place. It's about being here and, you know, having... I've talked to so many of you in the audience about, like, how vibrant I feel it is here and how I'm almost, like... I find it so hard. I have to leave in a half an hour to go back to Canada, and I'm like, I just want to be home more than ever, because... Not that it wasn't great, but I felt like when I lived here a long time ago, you know, it was like me, Will, and three other people. That's what it felt like, and it probably wasn't true, but it felt like there were just a few of us just out in the fog making things that, nope. And it was, but now it seems so vibrant, and there's a community here, and I'm sure the community was always here, but it's just a different way, and I just am really happy with... the fact that we can even sit and have this conversation, I feel like that wouldn't have happened just a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Does anyone else have any questions in the audience?
Steve Toppy.
Okay. Well, do you guys have anything else you'd like to add or talk about? Good. All right. Well, I just want to say thank you again for coming out and having this discussion with today. And we've recorded it as well, so we'll be putting it up on the website shortly, so people who have missed it can kind of weigh in and maybe talk a little bit more about what the black turnip means. So thank you so much. And thank you again to all of the artists and for participating.
I felt like my mind's not all here. I would start in one
place. You're very welcome to hang out, Rachel out, and
yeah.
I'll just stop this.
Do you know what it means to